Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
All right, well, it is a huge weekend in boxing. In Cardiff, Saturday night, Anthony Joshua makes his return against Joseph Parker, and huge Irish interest as well. Ryan Burnett is on that card, and Jason Quigley back in the ring as well over in America for the first time in a year. So a very opportune time to get Andy Lee back in studio.
How are you? Good, how are you?
Good. How excited should we be about Joshua against Parker?
It's a good fight. It's a good heavyweight fight, and it's a unification fight, so it'll always be exciting. Both guys are undefeated, both guys are champions. So in that alone, both guys will be bringing, you know, a fear of losing. They had never tasted it before, so they'll be not wanting to give an inch in terms of conceding defeat. In terms of a contest, to be honest, I only see it really going one way, and that's Anthony Joshua winning. He's just too big, too fundamentally sound in terms of what he does is very basic, and I'll just see him keeping his straight punches. Unless Joseph Parker can show something that he has. Well, he'll have to use his height disadvantage to his advantage, in the sense that
if he can
stay low, stay squat in his feet, almost Mike Tyson-esque, and get under Anthony Joshua's punches and try and get in close and in around his chest and then let his hands go. It's always way easier said than done, because he's going to have to fight against the reach. And then once he gets inside, he'll have to, Anthony Joshua look to tie him up, just like Klitschko used to do. To me, Joshua has based his whole career on Klitschko, you know.
Interesting that he's been working with Klitschko in the build-up to this fight. Is that the reason why, being used to being the bigger man all the time and dealing with those smaller opponents?
Yeah, well, Vladimir learned how to utilize his height and his advantages, you know, working with Emmanuel Stewart all those years. Emmanuel kind of kept him tall and showed him how to control a shorter man with his lead hand, which being his left hand, and he would use his left hand just to control the guy with his head, like paw him and kind of lull him to sleep and give him a false sense of calm with his left hand, and then shoot the right hand at a different speed, a different pace, a different power, and it would almost, you know, usually have a devastating effect.
Is that a mentality thing then? Is that patience?
It's patience. It's almost a mindset. It's letting I think Joshua will stand tall, be very robust and very compact, and use straight punches, jab, 1-2, and the odd left hook. That'll be as adventurous as you get in my eyes. And then when Parker gets in close, he looked to just a tie up, and what that does, it'll frustrate Parker. He'll be expending so much energy just trying to get in close, and then try to let his punch go, and then he'll find himself tied up, that he'll become frustrated, and the more frustrated an opponent gets, the more susceptible they are to being punched and knocked out, usually in the heavyweight division.
Is that one of the difficulties or one of the challenges maybe facing Anthony Joshua over these coming fights, maybe before he eventually fights Deontay Wilder, is the change in mentality? So now he's the champion, he's a superstar of boxing, that almost with that you want to be aggressive, you want to prove yourself, you want to be this dominant figure, whereas actually maybe like Klitschko at times, you just need to be a little bit boring and get the job done.
I think there is an onus on him to entertain, because you remember the criticism of Klitschko for years. People look back now, he was a great champion, and rightly so, deserves the credit, but he was boring in a lot of these fights. You know, and Emmanuel used to go crazy at him in the corner, because it would be going 10, 11 rounds when he could have stopped the guy after 6 rounds. So there is, especially with him being in pay-per-view, selling out big arenas, there is an onus on him to entertain and to finish these fights with a stopout. You saw the kind of how he became frustrated in his last fight against Takam. And he couldn't knock him out, and eventually the referee stopped the fight. Interestingly enough, Carlos Takam is their only shared opponent, both of these guys. And when he fought Joshua in the last fight, Takam, he stayed much in the defensive shell, felt he couldn't open up, and really was just looking to survive. When he fought Joseph Parker, albeit it's a couple of years ago, both younger men then, it was life and death. The fight was really close. Parker won a unanimous decision, but to me that was a hometown favouritism with the judges. And to me, the fight could have gone either way. It was, you know, they really had a tough fight. So that will just show you the way, I think that's a good indicator of where they are in terms of their level.
I'm going to have to calm those hands down on the table, because the people listening in, the speakers are booming out there as you're making your points. Interesting, Joshua, in the build-up, and he was saying he wants to maintain a challenger's mindset. So again, sort of following on from that of not acting like the champion. But in a way, do you need to change your mindset? Like, he is the champion now. Does he need to approach fights like that? Is that what you're saying? That actually going in thinking, trying to pretend that somehow you're the underdog in these things?
Yeah, I think a lot of things Joshua says are kind of they're kind of like sound bites, and kind of, you know, you could almost write them on the wall as an inspirational quote. And, you know, he kind of says things, and it sounds good, it writes well, it's good on paper, but I don't know if he believes it, like, you know, oh, the stay hungry, stay humble, and this and that. But I think when you become a champion, it kind of elevates you, and you have the mindset of a champion. My perspective would be to carry a champion's mentality, that I'm the champion, I fought and won this, and you're going to have to beat me, really beat me, and do something exceptional to take it away from me. So we'll see. But it is. It's a good fight. It's a good heavyweight fight. But Parker's going to have to show something that he hasn't shown. And history has taught us that fighters don't change from one fight to the next. You know, it's very, in order to change your style, it'll take a period of time, every year and three or four fights. And what I saw in his last few fights, Parker, it's not enough to beat Anthony Joshua.
Joshua as well, going back to that Klitschko fight, he faced pretty much everything in that. He was down. He was almost certainly out. But he proved to himself he had the chin to take a big bloody punch. So therefore, as he goes on to this sort of next stage in his career, is that something you can always draw back on then?
Yeah, I think so. He knows now he's been tested. In a way, he's been tested. You know, he fought a Klitschko who was, people must agree, he's beyond, past his best a little bit. And to my view of the fight was that Klitschko lost the fight more than Joshua won the fight. He had him down in the eighth round, Joshua, more or less out on his feet and really just surviving at that stage. And Klitschko, for whatever reason, I've heard that Vitaly told him just take it easy in the corner, you've won, winning the fight, just see out the rounds, don't take any chances. Klitschko let him off the hook, and he worked himself back into it, and he kind of woke up out of the malaise he was in from the knockdown in round 11 and just said, okay, I'm going to go for this, and threw caution to the wind and ended up stopping Klitschko. But it will stand to him, that test that he's been down, but he's still a young learning pro in my eyes, that he's still got a lot to learn. And yeah, I think his biggest tests are still out there in terms of Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury.
So if Parker's to have any chance, what should his game plan be?
He could do one of two things. Either stay completely out of range from Joshua, use footwork, move out, and to frustrate Joshua and make it a kind of a boring fight for 5 or 6 rounds, and then try to raid with quick footwork, raid and fast attacks. Don't try to throw any hard punches and don't try to knock him out, but just raid and kind of steal the rounds and frustrate Joshua, and then maybe in the last 4 to 3 rounds try to get a knockout. Or else he can be totally aggressive, stay small, stay squat, a la Mike Tyson, get underneath Joshua's punches, make Joshua feel insecure by punching down at him, and make him feel exposed by doing that, and then come up with his own punches. It's easy said and done, but to me, I can only see the fight going one way, and that's a Joshua maybe mid to late stoppage.
Yeah, Parker's been talking up his punching power, again, sound bites ahead of the fight, saying what he has to say to try and build it up and get people's interest, saying that Joshua's never faced any sort of power like that he's going to face from Parker. Does he have that in his arsenal if he does everything right, if he gets his game plan, that when he does land some punches, to have the power to actually do some damage to Joshua?
I think he has enough power to hurt Joshua. We've seen Joshua hurt now against Klitschko, against Dillian White, and a few times in the amateurs, against Dillian White in the amateurs, and knocked down against David Price in the amateurs. So you can see that he can be hurt. And I think Parker does have, and Parker's a really good fighter. Don't let me take away from him the way I've been speaking, thinking that he's not going to win this fight, because he is a really good fighter and a really good heavyweight. But to me, he's just a good heavyweight. When you look at Joshua, Fury, Wilder, Klitschko, those guys are like super heavyweights. You know, they're 6'5" plus, and they're 240 pounds, you know, so it's really, really tough to win against those guys, because they're just too big. They're just units.
I've been trying to say as well that Joshua has a soft chin. Rumours that he's been down in sparring. Do you believe any of this stuff in the weeks leading up to a fight?
No, I know Daniel Dubois, the Frank Warren heavyweight, I saw a video and I heard a few counts that he had rocked Joshua in sparring, but this was a while ago. This thing's always happened in sparring, and to me, the Joshua camp, have got to, the Park camp, have got to say something just to get under the skin and try to unnerve them.
Yeah. Deontay Wilder, it seems, isn't going to be there. Not happy that he was, well, he was meant to be working for Sky, but Eddie Hearn wouldn't allow a post-fight face-off, so he's decided not to travel. Again, is this just the hype machine and Deontay Wilder, or is there a deeper meaning as to why
probably
he's not turning up?
A little bit
up?
Of ego from both, well, from Wilder saying, like, I'm the champion, you have to kind of lay it on for me, treat me well and do what I say, I'll make the demands, not you demand, you know, that kind of, and so I won't come. Just probably a little bit of ego, but it, like, he has to come through Saturday night, Joshua, but that's the fight that everybody wants to see. I know Dillian White's in line to fight Wilder now, but people want to see that fight, and hopefully they'll make it happen before one of them gets beat.
Yeah, Garth A. Davies was saying probably 2019, maybe it was always going to be 2019, so one more fight for each of them between now and then. Would that sound about right?
Yeah, and it would build it nicely. It would build it nicely. To be honest with you, I don't, only Fury and Wilder I see out there to beat Joshua. You know, maybe that's all I can see. I can't see anybody else beating him. I was going to mention somebody else, but no, that's probably the only guys I can see beating Joshua right now is Fury and Wilder. So until those fights are made, I think all guys are secure.
Ryan Burnett is also on the card in Cardiff on Saturday night. He is the main support act, essentially, defending his WBA bantamweight title against Venezuela's Yunfres Pareko. Is this a dangerous fight for Burnett?
All fights are dangerous. Pareko is world class in my eyes. He's lost a fight, a majority decision, to Zakyanov, who Burnett beat, but it was a very tough fight. And to my mind, Pareko, I watched the fight, I thought Pareko could have won it. The fight was in Monaco, and I think Ricky Hatton was, you know, was who Zakyanov's promoter, had a little bit of sway there with the judges. And I think it's a dangerous fight, but a good fight for Ryan at this stage in his career. It's a dangerous fight in the sense that Pareko is not heralded. He's not another champion. So Ryan may go in there with a little bit, you know, have his eye one fight ahead or a little bit.
But also, suddenly, by the time he gets into the ring, it's probably going to be almost full. There'll be almost 80,000 people there. It's hard not to get caught up in the emotion of that as well.
Ryan's very strong mentally, and he talks about himself on the show with me and Jerry last week. He almost comes about, kind of finds some sort of zen in that moment when he's in that. He loves being in that moment when everything's going on, when the crowd there cheering, you're announcing your name, the music's blaring, and he kind of finds a peace there. That's how he described it to me. Yeah. So I
can embrace it.
I think I'd love to see him put on a great show now and really show out and get people excited about him here in the Republic as much as they are in Belfast and in England.
Yeah, because generally they are exciting fights. They turn into a bit of a war. Does he need to get away from that, or actually, when you are the support act, do you need to go out? Do you need to not give the opposition opportunities, but make it an interesting fight for people
to be
watching?
He doesn't need to trade with Pareko. He's a strong, he's a man. To me, Ryan is maturing, but he's still a young fighter. He's still only 25. He's still maturing, and he'll only come into his best maybe in the next 3 years, Ryan. So I think he should use his speed and use his smarts and be clever and be quick and sting Pareko and hopefully stop him in the later rounds. I'd like to see Ryan get a stoppage, and I think it's well within his grasp.
And much like Joshua then, when you are going in as the defending champion, you want to go out and set out your game plan, that this is your ring, this is your fight. You're the guy who's lucky to be here with me.
Well, I'm sure that'll be the sense, especially with they have the weigh-in. Pareko will be coming all the way from Puerto Rico. You know, he's in Wales. It's a completely different culture, different atmosphere, different environment. And he'll be getting weighed in first. They'll be announcing Ryan's name second. He'll be getting a big cheer. Same with the fight. Ring walk first. Big cheer for Ryan. And here, it's a tall order for Ryan, but it's also a tall order for Pareko to come here and beat Ryan Burnett, who's, to me, I put him in the top 10 pound for pound in the world right now. So he better prove me right.
He better deliver on it. Jason Quigley is back this weekend as well in Massachusetts, Easter Sunday. He's fighting Daniel Cruz. 26 now, he's been out since March of last year, suffered a really bad hand injury. Is this one of these fights, if you're in this position, long injury layoff, you just need to get through it, you just need to almost reassure yourself that your body's still working?
These can be the toughest fights you have. Like, he's come through a tough training camp, so his hand must be in good shape. You know, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but he's saying that he's in good shape, he's saying his hand's fully healed. It's a dangerous fight. He's got, you know, 11 wins, 3 losses, but he's won 10 of those by KO, Cruz. So it's a dangerous fight to come back after a year's layoff. And, like, Quigley, if he just gets the win, I think it'll be, he might be disappointed in not getting a stoppage, but if he just gets the win, I think it'll be a good result. Interesting to see how he shows, what style, how he turns up now that he's training with Dominic Ingle since before Christmas, so a bit of time there to adapt. And
what are you looking out for then?
The Ingle style is an awkward style, but it's elusive. Traditionally, it's hands down. It's hands down by the waist and punching from awkward angles and slipping and moving your head and using footwork. And it's a very effective style for them. I think finding some medium between Quigley's own style and the Ingle style. And I'm sure they will. He's been sparring with Billy Joe Saunders, Kell Brook. So he's been sparring with world champions, world-class fighters, and that can only improve him.
Does that again add to the potential danger that suddenly there's a whole lot going through your mind? You're thinking about what you've been working on for the last 3 or 4 months, and also you're always just slightly wondering about the hand.
There's a lot to be, he'll be carrying a lot on his mind going into the fight, especially. And I think, like I said earlier about Parker, it takes 4 fights a year to adapt to a new style of training, or to show out a new style. So I would say, and when you're under pressure, when you're at, like, when you're backs against the ropes, you will always revert to what you know. So if you see Quigley boxing in his normal style, which was a mix between his amateur days and some of the pro stuff he picked up in California, then that's what we'll see. But I would like to just see one or two things, maybe, and just see a little bit difference from that he's picked up from Dominic Ingle.
If he does, say, go back to his previous style and in the chaos of the fight, but he goes on and he wins, what generally happens then when you go back into camp with Dominic Ingle?
Oh, you work on it, and you realise that nothing happens overnight. I found the same. My first fight with Adam Booth, I fought Anthony Fitzgerald on a Frampton on the card in Belfast. It was probably one of my worst showings. You know, it was my first fight back in on this side of the country, of the world, after losing to Chavez a year later, and working with Adam for about 6 months at that stage. And it was one, like, people said, people were writing me off then and there because they didn't realize that I was using the fight to adapt. And I was using the fight as training, in a sense that I was trying to implement the things that we'd been working on, which was up close fighting and what Adam was trying to add to my game. So if Quigley goes out there on Saturday and looks bad but gets the win, I would say don't worry about it. Just keep moving on, keep working in the gym with Dominic Ingle, and in a year's time, then we can judge your improvement, you know? Also on the undercard in Boston on Saturday night is Ray Moylett from Mayo. He's 8-0, so he's fighting, makes his first fight of the year, so he's a good prospect as well.
Just on that then, so when you're under Adam Booth, and those first 2-3 rounds where you're working on a new game plan, new tactics, but also it's your first fight back in a year, so there's probably some questions about fitness and wondering where you are in terms of ring fitness. What's going through your head in those first 2-3 rounds? How are you managing to keep your concentration to a level where you can go back to what you've been doing in training with Adam Booth?
To be honest with you, you just try to keep it as simple as possible and just win the round. Quigley, like, even though Quigley will be learning a new style, nothing wrong with his old style. You know, he got himself this far. What's he now, 11-0? So he hasn't done too badly, and he's headlined on big shows in America. So if he does find that it's a tough fight, he'll revert to his old style and he'll box well, and I think he'll beat Cruz, but as long as he keeps boxing, which is the Ingle style, box, don't get involved, don't fight, and take the rounds, don't look for a knockout. I mean, use the rounds, get your fitness, get your sharpness back, and hopefully hold up.
He is 26 now, so what are you looking for over the next couple of years?
He's 26, but he's a young 26. He's only got 11 fights, and he turned pro. You know, he didn't have a long senior amateur career. He had the European silver medal and almost went pro after that. So I think there's time for him. He's 26. We had a year out, which is he'll probably feel more rushed to get it done. But I think he can wait till he's 29, 30. I think that's when you see his peak. I think middleweights peak around 30 years old. And that's when you'll see him kind of get that physical man strength and also the ring craft and general chip that he needs.
So just some good management over the next few years, picking the right
fights. Pick the right opponents. Fighters with winning records, maybe ex-champions who are on the slide, older guys, and build up experience and take their time with him. You know, there's no rush. I don't feel there's any rush with him.
So it's going to be a really interesting weekend. You mentioned Ray Moylett there as well on the same card. Jason Quigley, Ryan Burnett, Anthony Joshua. The big story, though, that had been dominating a good chunk of the week was around Canelo Alvarez and this doping controversy. So he's been temporarily suspended by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Two positive tests for clenbuterol. Now, he claims it was from eating contaminated beef. Right now, May 5th, Gennady Golovkin, the rematch, it is still on. What are your thoughts on all this?
I think the fight's in jeopardy. I seriously, seriously do. There's a hearing in April in front of the...
April 10th, yeah.
Yeah, the Nevada Commission. And people are saying that they're just, you know, they're just... The hearing is just to show face, to save face, and to just to say that they went about it, but that there's too much money involved and that this fight will never get cancelled. But
it feels as though there's so much momentum behind it now.
There is a lot, like, there's a lot of money behind it. There's a lot more money involved. Like, I think the first fight grossed over 27 million, and this fight would probably do more. But just to highlight how serious it is about the start, like HBO, who showed the White Brown fight at the weekend, didn't use that opportunity to promote the fight May 5th, which they would have done anyway, which they had scheduled to do, and since have taken it off their schedule. So HBO, which is the broadcaster, and also the company that run the closed circuit TV for the cinemas in America, which that you pay to go into the cinema and watch the fight live, they've pulled it. So I think there's serious chance this fight could get cancelled. And
what does that be? He'd probably be the highest profile boxer to be done for performance enhancing drugs.
Yeah.
Like, does this kill his career?
No, unfortunately not. He's too big of a star. And there's been several Mexican boxers in the past who have failed for clenbuterol, like Eric Morales, Fernando Vargas. They all claim it's the Mexican meat. But
and what's the attitude generally among boxers towards other boxers who've taken and served bans for performance enhancing drugs? Depending on the money on offer, do you just turn a blind eye?
No, it's how can I say? People who've tested positive have a black mark against them. You know, you kind of respect all fighters. Once they cross that line of taking a performance-enhancing drug in a sport like boxing, where lives are at risk, it's I know it's criminal. It is criminal, and it's probably the worst. Like for a boxer. From one box to another, when I've heard that you've tested positive, you've taken something knowingly, yeah, it's probably the lowest thing you can do.
So he will get other fights, he will probably get other opportunities to win titles.
He will, because he's too
when people are sitting down doing their 10 best pound for pound fighters, suddenly you got a black mark through his name, he's out of that reckoning.
And I think there'll be some serious repercussions in terms of the TV networks. Now, he's the biggest star, he sells the most, he's the biggest star in boxing right now. So I don't know. There'll have to be some serious propaganda done and some promoting done and try and clear his image and clear his name. But it doesn't look good.
Doesn't look good. We shall wait and see what happens. April 10th is when he faces the commission, and May 5th it is still on as of now against Gennady Golovkin.
Coincidentally, Tom Lofer, Golovkin's promoter, says that if Canelo's banned, Golovkin will fight that date against Hidden Pawn. We'll wait and see.
Yeah, possibly Spike O'Sullivan.
Possibly, yeah. That'd be a great fight for Highland if he gets the fight.
Yeah, we'll have plenty of time to chat about that between now and then. Andy, great stuff as always. Thanks a lot for coming into the studio. We'll chat to you, I'm sure, next week as well to look back on a brilliant weekend of boxing. Up next, though, we're going to be talking GAA.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.